Okay, guys, I think we can start. So as I was saying, if you have a chance to take a survey, but unfortunately there is no Wi-Fi connection here, so I didn't foresee that. But you can always take a picture of the QR code or write down my email and then send me your reply. There's very few questions that are concerning general knowledge about plastics, a few things. All right, so we can start. I'm going to try to talk to you about a topic which is very vast and complex, which I try to do in a very short time, under an hour. So it might get a little bit intense. If you feel it's getting intense, you can raise your hands and ask some questions, and then we make it more relaxed. Because actually, this is several talks in one, which I comprised. So let's see, we're going to talk a little bit about, well, first I'm going to introduce myself, then what are plastics, what's the plastic problem, and how we can solve it, potentially. So, my name is Maddie. I'm the founding manager of The World is Home, which is a nonprofit association fighting plastics of people like you and me. I've been working with plastic for quite a while. I come from Sweden originally, and my background is entrepreneurship. I've worked in various industries. But my most important job is being a mom. So it is because of that that I got into this plastic business. So in 2019, my husband and our three kids decided to go on a world tour. We took out the kids from school and just wanted to world school. We wanted to discover nature and just discover the world. That world tour was a very slow realization of the reality of the plastic pollution. The plastic pollution, which we were able to discover because we would stay a little bit longer than usual tourists. We would see what happens in the evenings when the plastics are cleaned out of the beaches or burned in the backyards. And we also had a chance to talk to a lot of people. We visited a lot of villages. And all in all, I've been to over 50 countries. And together with my kids, almost 30 countries. So we've visited quite a bit of the world. So maybe this is how the world tour should have looked. But actually, it was more like this. This is Komodo Islands, and this is a place where there is no people. There are no boats going here. It's a wild place. This was a revelation, a sad one. We realized that plastics is everywhere, okay? This is an illegal landfill in the tropical forest of Malaysia, amongst others. We found it floating everywhere, in every sea, lake, river that we have been visiting. It was also burning in the air, openly. This is releasing dioxins and furans, which are the most toxic compounds known to humanity, or known to us on Earth. This pollution also reaches very, very remote places. So this is a shot that I took in Namibian desert. Namibia is the second least populated country in the world. And this is a black widow nest. And as you can see, there is a small debris of plastic even there. Of course, as you travel along Southeast Asia, you realize that there is no such thing as proper waste management. There's no real, it's not as controlled as we have it in the West. And that is a sad realization. And we also realize that, you can put next slide, it's handled by millions of people daily. It's also eaten by animals. So this is a shot we took in Japan, and this is a deer. And Japan is a very plastic-free place in the sense that when you arrive there, you do not really feel there's a plastic pollution. But Japanese people use a lot of plastics. They consume a lot of plastics. They just keep it very tidy. And unfortunately, these animals were found with 4 kilos of plastic debris in their stomachs when we were there. And it is a global problem, the plastic problem. This is not Southeast Asia, this is not India, this is my hometown and my country in Sweden, and where we really do manage plastic very well, and we are thinking of ourselves as very ecologically aware. So this problem is actually arriving here because of the fact that we are connected with the rest of the world. So we have gyres, which are large ocean currents, and there are 5 large gyres. But as you can see, one of these gyres goes up all the way there, and that ends up in a place we call Bohuslän, which used to be voted the most beautiful and pristine beach in the world. So we take out roughly a bathtub a year of plastic debris from there, and most of it does not come from Sweden. Okay, let's see. So what are plastics? I have given you a bag here to fiddle around with. These are various items. Yeah, you can just pass it around. These are various items. Of course, many people ask me, where does plastic start and when does it stop? Very often here in India, people confuse this non-woven materials with cotton or tissue, which it is not, of course. Another example of non-woven materials would be a face mask. These are plastics, and they're rather toxic to breathe. So we also have another good example here. This bag here claims that it is perfectly fine to throw it away in the environment, which of course is not the case. Okay, this will never degrade in nature. So that's another one. And there's another example, bioplastics. I might talk a little bit more about that. It feels different. It's made out of different kind of material. And yet, it says clearly here that it is perfectly fine to throw it in nature and that it will biodegrade. That is not the case. This is biodegradable, but only if used in an industrial compost, which obviously is not around. So plastics are various things. We use them in our everyday life. And they come very often, especially when it comes to packaging, with these numbers. You've surely seen them, 1 to 7. So there are various varieties of plastics, PET, PVC, HDP, et cetera, polypropylene, and so on. 7 means other. It's as simple as that. 7 is basically other thousands of different plastics, including bioplastics, by the way. Okay, so these enumerations were made by the plastic industry. So they are just confusing us. We believe that there's something done with these plastics, but that's not the case. So to explain what plastics is, they are simple monomers, small molecules that are being replicated and put together through a process called polymerization, and they're forming a long chain, a string, like a pearl string. And these monomers are heavy, so these large molecules are heavy, and they need additives. They need additives to be stabilized. So what happens is that we add these additives in order to reinforce them, stabilize them, make sure that they are resistant to UV light or flame retardant that make them burn roughly 10 to 15 seconds later. So these flame retardants are, of course, also in our sofas, in our chairs, in many of our furniture, upholstery, and so on, just in case somebody falls asleep with a cigarette. So these polymer chains... These additives are then added into these polymer chains, and those are the dangerous ones. They keep the polymers from, they keep the molecules from falling apart, basically. But they're also leaching out eventually. And I'll talk more about that. So what's the problem? Plastic is toxic. It's basically, in one word, plastic is toxic throughout its eternal life cycle. So the extraction of the fossil fuels, which is the main producer, it's fossil fuels. It's a byproduct of fossil fuels, mostly gas. Therefore, it's very, very cheap as well. It's good to know because, you know, if you've got something as a byproduct, it's not really requiring a lot, not a lot of energy. And therefore, it's extremely cheap. So any other alternative will be very, very hard. You will have a very hard time competing with plastics because it's the cheapest material. And this toxic cycle is long because it's coming from the extractions, how we extract. For example, we can do fracking. We will pierce, you know, rocks and enter a lot of toxic chemicals into the soil, into our waters to extract them. And then we have the process of it, and then we have the transport of it. We form it, we create the plastic pellets, which are small plastic pieces, which we later on mold into various objects. And then, of course, the afterlife. They're toxic during their entire life cycle, so the afterlife as well. They continue leaching these additives and toxins into the soil, into the air, into the water, into our food as well. So who's reading the labels? Who is a label reader? Yes, we got a few label readers. Yes, very good. Super, 3 people, that's great. I'm very happy. I also read the labels, or at least I used to before I lost my sight, and I still pretend I'm 20 and I don't want to use glasses. But actually what happens is that we cannot read on the labels what toxins or what chemical components plastic contains. We can't read that. There is no such regulation simply that says for the plastic makers or packaging makers to state what components are in the plastics. So we cannot know. It's just impossible. It doesn't say, hi, this one is got this in this chemicals in it. It doesn't say that. Okay. I use that picture here. It's microbeads. Some of the girls might know this. These are small, small plastic balls which are added into our creams, our sun creams, our different kind of cosmetic products to make us more beautiful. And these small beads are a huge, huge problem, which we will talk about also a little bit further. So, as I said, the additives leach toxin. Once they're in the soil, they start leaching, and when they are disposed of in nature, if they haven't been burned, in which case, of course, they release the dioxins and furans I mentioned earlier, they will then slowly but surely be taken with rivers and different water streams into the oceans. The oceans are full of plastics. We talk about 12 million tons of plastics, and this is a huge amount. And we're talking about both big plastics and small plastics and tiny plastics. So the microbeads are one of those things. They will pass all the filters, even in our sinks as we wash off our creams, they will pass that off, and they will leach into the oceans. So in the European Union, it was estimated that the hazardous health chemicals were in the 211 million tons in 2011. So I know that it's very hard to grasp these kind of numbers, but it's a lot. So what else is a problem? Slow research. It's hard to research because we're talking about so many things. As I just explained, we're talking about everything in our daily lives. We have so much plastics around us. You would have to make very, very sophisticated research, which will combine a lot of different things that will exposing us to. I usually take the example of kids. When I had my babies, I was not aware of this. So I did not use a reusable diaper on my children, not until the last one at least. I heard that it was not good to give them food with metal spoons, so I used plastic spoons. I did all my food at home, but sometimes if I was out and about in the town, I lived in Paris with small kids, I did bring a plastic container, which I then heated in microwaves. So I did all the things that you're not supposed to do. But I did get a bottle which said no BPH, because at that time somebody had told me that BPH is a very bad toxin which you shouldn't heat in your microwave and it would be harmful. I'll tell you a little bit more about BPH in a moment. There's also slow regulation. Why? Well, if we talk about such a huge amount of chemicals and toxins, in order to stop one chemical that is toxic or is proven toxic, you know, it takes years. It takes years, it takes funding, it takes research, and then that thing will be blocked. But by the time that's blocked, we have replaced it with something else, right? BPH, which I just mentioned, do I have a slide about the BPH? I think so. Maybe my son clicked too fast here. Yeah, I think I had one here. So BPA and BPH, and BPS, sorry. So BPH was, BPA was exchanged by BPS. And the big change here is that it's actually a very powerful toxic as well. It's just that now we don't have any research about it, so it's not forbidden. So when I got this bottle, and in order for this plastic to be transparent, we need that additive. This additive makes plastic transparent. So I had another transparent bottle, and obviously it was because I had it with BPS, but I didn't know that. And it's going to take years before BPS is forbidden. These are quite harmful endocrine disruptive chemicals. They mimic the hormones, which are responsible for many, many things and many diseases. I don't want to go too much into details about the sad things that plastic does, because I don't want you guys to cry when we get out of here. But they are dangerous to our health in all the levels, both to men, women, children, and animals. Okay, so what else about plastic? Plastic is eternal. So I often hear people tell me that, oh yeah, plastic is going to dissolve after 400 years. And that feels like a tangible number. 400 years, that's not so bad. It's okay. 400 years later, it's going to be gone. When we interviewed people in Southeast Asia, and we did many, many hundreds of interviews, most people thought plastics would dissolve within a month. And so that's a very big gap between a month and 400 years. But 400 years is also very misleading. For plastic to disintegrate or to break up, because what happens is that these polymer chains that we talked about earlier, when they're exposed to UV or to oxygen or water, they will simply break up like this pearl necklace we were talking about, right? So they will just break up. They don't disappear. They don't biodegrade, meaning they're not eaten by anything. They're not natural, so they're man-made. And therefore, they just become smaller and smaller pieces. They will become microplastics. You've probably all heard about that. And when they become even smaller than that, they're called nanoplastics. And nanoplastics are the size of bacteria. So, you know, it's really hard to catch those. We have found in recent studies in the last 2 or 3 years plastics in placenta, in human placenta. We have found plastics in blood. We find plastics in lungs. And this microplastics also, the scientists are also calculating. Newcastle University, I think, if I recall correctly, from Australia, made a study a few years ago where they said that we consume roughly a credit card of plastics every week. That's the little microplastics we will have, whether it's in our fish or in other food elements or in our waters. These small amounts actually add up, and we have that in our stomachs. And if we would compare to an animal, for example, I was recently reading that veterinaries had found something like 9 kilograms of plastics in a cow. I know cows have 4 stomachs, and there are some rumors on the internet that cows actually digest plastics, but that is not really true. These toxins will leach out into the cow's healthy body as well and make it unhealthy. What else? We have also the synthetic materials. I'm not going to get into too many details about that, but synthetic materials are all the things that we actually buy cheaply these days. Maybe sometimes not. Maybe even big brands make synthetic materials these days. What happens is these are plastic materials. One of them is polyester. You also have a very old one, which is called nylon. Everybody has got knows what the nylon stockings are as and look like. And so these plastic materials, when we wash them, tiny fibers will come off. They're called microfibers. And when we wash them in our washing machines, you get the numbers here. One laundry will unleash more than 1 million plastic fibers. Roughly 15 to 30% of these microfibers are passing through all our filtrations. So I'm not even talking about, not even your washing machine. I mean, even the city filtration, the ones that, you know, in the big places where they're supposed to eliminate all the bad things from water, they cannot. They're too small. And why do we care about such a small problem? It's just such a tiny problem, right? You can see a picture here. It's a beautiful picture. These microorganisms, the smallest organism in the sea, they will actually eat them. And if I put the toxins in these products aside, and if we just talk about the size of it, when a small organism like this eats a fiber, which fills its belly, it doesn't actually get anything nutritious. So it dies. And if these tiny things die, then the bigger things that feed on them die as well. And again, we're back into the same problem. It concerns us all. Yeah, then this is a picture from here. I think you've all seen this in real life, everywhere. This cow is, of course, trying to nibble something out of the waste because there is no proper waste disposal system in place here. And it also sniffs the dioxins that are coming out from these burnt plastics. All right, and we have some more problems with plastics. We also have the fake solutions. I'm also not going to get into too much of a detail here. But we have very strong lobby from the fossil fuel makers. We have very, very strong lobby from the plastic makers, packaging, and all kinds of items. They are very rich, and they have wonderful methods of making plastic seem like something very vital to us, something we absolutely cannot live without. There is a term called astroturfing. I don't know if you're aware of that. Okay, you know what it is. So basically what happens is that companies with big amount of money will create nonprofit organizations that more or less look like me here, you know, and they will be fighting for the good stuff. They will be fighting against plastics. One of them is Plastic Waste Alliance. So it's called Alliance to End the Plastic Waste. They have a budget of 1.5 billion euros. So obviously, you know, we don't have so much chance against their publicities and things, you know. And they're wonderful. They're fighting plastics, you know. They're really fighting plastics. But then I checked who they were, and I realized that they were 35 of the largest plastic-making companies in the world. So why would the biggest companies in the world make an NGO that fights plastic? Because it works. Because then we pay attention to false solutions. We pay attention to false solutions like recycling, which doesn't exist. We pay attention to pickups. Oh, they will sponsor all pickups. Like, you can go and pick the plastic up on the beach. You can clean out everything, pick the plastic up. And then what? Right? So these are like the typical methods for these companies to get away with the reality, from the reality, and make us confused. You have greenwashing as well. Greenwashing is, if you don't know the term, probably everybody knows that term, it's just making things green. It's just making products look green and wonderful and eco-friendly. Coca-Cola is a master at that. Coca-Cola has these products here, for example. One of them is called Innocent. Another one is called Honest. These are beautiful names. These are beautiful names for not very healthy products packaged in plastics. So let's see. There is 8 to 14 million tons of plastic waste dumped in our oceans every single year. And that amount is growing. So who is making them? You all recognize these brands. Those are the biggest brands. And Coca-Cola is one of the biggest ones. But let's see. Coca-Cola produces 200,000 plastic bottles every minute. I let that sink in. So the plastic fighter, the green company that does all these honest and great products, actually produces a lot of plastics. Now, they always promise every single year to recycle. So you would say, what's the problem? If we can recycle, it's just fine. It's just wonderful. Circular. You've probably heard these words, circular economy. Yeah? Well, there's nothing circular about plastics. There's nothing circular about plastics. It's not glass. It's not metal. You cannot recycle plastic that way. And Coca-Cola includes 2 to 6%, according to their own statistics, of recycled plastics into their bottles. All right. So, now that we know all these problems, is the output of new plastics decreasing? What do you think? Anyone? Ladies saying no? What do you think? Who thinks that it's decreasing with all the efforts that we're making? You've heard about the plastic pollution. Raise your hands if you think it's decreasing. Great. Kids, you're good. Yes, keep fighting. That's great. Well, the truth is that no, it's not decreasing. So I just want to give you this perspective. More than half of the plastics that output that we have on Earth today has been produced in the last 15 years, roughly. The statistics say from 2005 until today. This means that the plastic output we had 20 years ago was much, much smaller. Today, thank you, today we produce more than 400 million tons of new virgin plastics every year. And that number increases by 4% yearly. Okay, and that's not the worst part of it. The worst part is that single-use plastics, the plastics that you used once or at least very, very shortly, has a very short lifespan, like your plastic bag or cup or takeaway things, they represent 45%, maybe more, of that. That's almost 200 million tons of single-use products every year, every year. There's roughly 9 billion tons of plastics out in nature waiting for us to recycle it or fix the problem. And while we're thinking about that, we're adding new plastic, virgin plastics, into the circulation all the time. All right, so by the time that my youngest boy will be a teenager, the scientists say that if we don't do anything, and if it's the progress is as is, we're going to have 1,100 tons produced by the time we are 2050, we'll have an output of new plastics that year of 1,100 tons. All right, let's talk a little bit about recycling, because I know people love recycling, and I did too for a while. I grew up in Sweden, and we recycle. Most of our recycling is called waste to energy. That basically means we burn plastics. Okay, from the bad things, I'm not sure it's the worst one anymore, but because it's controlled in incinerators, the downside of that is that such incinerators are very complex and very expensive to do. A break even for such a machine usually takes about 30 years. With government subventions, say 15, 16 years, to just break even. This means that we need to feed this dragon. We need to give him plastics. We literally import plastics sometimes. And no, it's not all plastics. It's only nice and clean plastics. Just some sort of these raisins we were talking about. Not all. Not your plastic bags, your dirty stuff, your plastic foils over your food. That doesn't go in there, okay? It has to be a certain quality of plastics. So that's another lie. It's not really recycling, okay? When we say recycling, sometimes we think of downcycling. Downcycling is simply the process of taking a PET bottle, which is the common good plastics that you can actually do something with, and make another PET bottle. It's just that if you just did that, except for very exceptional technologies in Italy, and so I have investigated this for a while, it does in theory exist. In the larger scale, a PET bottle doesn't make a PET bottle. You need minimum 70% of virgin plastics to make a decent bottle. This basically means that you need new raisins, and this is why the recycling has always been so promoted. Promoted by the plastic industry since 1971. Very strongly. A lot of money has gone into lobbying for this recycling process because they keep selling virgin plastics. And when you get that, you stop talking so much about the recycling. Of course, we have some experts that are very good at upcycling, and that's a great thing. That's a way of keeping waste out of the streets, upcycling products, reusing products. That's a great idea, but it's not a solution to the plastic problem. It's just a solution to waste. Picking up. Let's see. How can we possibly solve this? Okay, so I always use this image because I think it's very visual. If we continue picking up plastics, it's like if we had a bathtub which was overflowing with water and we kept inventing really good methods to clean the water that falls out of the bathtub. To me, it just sounds more logical if we can turn it off. Turn off the water that is overflowing first and then handle the water that is on the floor later. It's a tough thing. It's not so easy. I think we have to work on two different levels. One is top-bottom, and another one is bottom-to-the-top, grassroots initiatives. So the bottom-up, that's us, guys. That's us. That's our everyday lives. That's us paying attention, really paying attention, doing something in our everyday life, a little bit. And I know that I can get contagious. Some of my friends are already like, oh my gosh, I can't take that. Maddie will be angry, right? It's a little bit contagious, but it gets fun. The less plastic you use, I know there's some experts, zero waste experts in the audience today. And the less plastic you get home, the more happy you are, actually. You're kind of proud of yourself. But you are that way because you understand the problem, because you have first realized. Because if somebody tells you that there's a solution out there and that all is clean and perfect and then we just recycle, you never bother. Why would you? If it's not a problem, then why would you? You first have to understand the problem, learn about it, and try to navigate the greenwashing, astroturfing, and all that stuff that is trying to keep you confused. Today's world is a lot of that. Anyways, we also have the top bottom, which is basically legislation and the implementation of legislation. I don't know the Indian legislation that well. I'm quite new here. But I know that there have been some efforts and that there are different states that are better, others are worse. I think that without the, implementing the laws, without giving fines, the fact that the law is there is not so relevant, even in the West. Yeah. So we have to have legislation and we have to have implementation of that legislation, enforcement. We can, of course, also work on an internationally binding treaty. And I'm a part of the coalition that is working on a treaty, which is probably going to happen in 2024. So that's another way. That will be a legally binding treaty, and India is a part of it, 175 countries. And the Plastic Treaty Coalition are nonprofit organizations that are not astroturfing. There are real organizations that try to stop this, and we put our, you know, information in it. As a private citizen, you can also do a lot. You can also speak up. You can do things with your communities. You don't have to be 1,000 people. You can be 3 neighbors. You can be 3 neighbors that care and that write. You write to your mayors, you take pictures, you get involved with other groups, and that helps. All that helps. Those are ripples. And they do have an effect, a huge effect. So, noticing, learning, and then acting. For some solutions, I can just share with you what I've done in my own life, which is basically not buying cheaper. Every time I buy something very cheap, I'm always wondering why it's so cheap and who I have scammed here, maybe a child in China. What I do is that I buy some better quality things that are maybe more expensive at first, but in the long run, I have them for many years. I buy clothes for my kids, which the next brother can wear, and then the next brother. I buy good shoes, preferably not of plastic, although I'm not completely innocent. I try to buy good quality things that will last, that don't break. These quality things also have a life after I've used them. I might give them to a cousin or to a neighbor or to a friend. I think gift economy is something beautiful here in Oroville, so it's definitely something worth pursuing. Exchanging, changing things, yeah? Not throwing away, changing between each other. Buying secondhand. I don't know how that works here, but back in Sweden, in Germany, in France, this is a trend that is growing a lot. You can buy used clothes that are perfectly fine. Somebody bought something too small. I'm sure that all the girls have something in the wardrobe which they were like, why did I buy this? And so, you know, you just sell it off cheaply, and then another girl is wearing it, and she's happy about that. You can even do that with great fancy brands and everything. You've got all these really nice apps today you can do that on. So that's another great way of avoiding new plastic polymers, like polyester, for example. Of course, bring your own takeaway. It can be a hustle. So when I started my non-plastic journey, or I won't say zero waste, but trying to be as zero waste as possible, I went to the shop, and every time I forgot my bags and my containers. And then I had 3 kids and a maxi cozy, and I was a busy mom, and I was just exhausted, and I was like, fine, I'll get another bag. And then I had a bad feeling about that, so I bought these big bags, you know, the really big plastic bags, like the thick ones, and then I had like 60 of them at home, you know. And I was like, ugh. So one day I said to myself, okay, that's it. If you forget your bags, you go back home. And I did that once, and that was it. I just went back home and got the containers and got the bags, and I never forgot them again. I left them in my car. I was living in a city, so I was commuting with a car. But just leaving them, you know, in your scooter, a few things, that's already something. And taking away food can be a problem, but I think here in India, it's less of a problem. You can actually bring your own containers. There's so many of these wonderful metal containers that everybody's using, which I love. So that's another tip. Yeah, and of course, reading and learning and constantly exploring and exchanging information with others, because we always think that we know everything, and then we meet another girl or another boy, and he goes like, oh my gosh, you're using that? Don't you know it has... And therefore, we learn from the others, yeah? We learn, we improve. So, guys, this is it. I didn't want to bother you more because I think it's quite intense. We can go into every single one of these topics in details. We can have other talks. I'm very happy to share much more about various things, especially chemicals or lobby, which I'm involved in. Against. But I would like to ask you all to... Okay, so I did this QR code, and I think that maybe not everybody can get an internet connection, but if you take a picture of the QR code, you can go on your phones at home. And the challenge is very simple. I ask every one of you to just keep all the plastics or all that you think is plastics at home for 1 month. You know, like you come back from the shop, you rinse it, and you put it in one place, and you store it. And then you can send me the pictures after 1 month, and let's have a look at how much that sums up to. Let's have a look. Maybe you're going to have very little plastics, you know, but just keep it for 1 month, and we can talk about it a month later if you're available and if you're interested. Okay? Any questions? Yes.
Thanks for your great talk. I'm interested in practical application. I find a lot of Oroville products that come in plastic wrappers with paper inside that are not reusable, and you have to cut them to get in. There, you know, like sometimes I'd like a kombucha and it's in a plastic bottle. What can we do?
Okay, for the kombucha, you know the answer.
Make my own.
You make your own kombucha. It's really simple, and I'm sure that Mint, who is in the audience, will share an amazing recipe with you. I've learned how to make the kombucha here, so it's not that difficult. It's actually fun, and it's alive, so it's really cool. It's alive. It's a living organism, which I think is so awesome. For the plastics in Oroville, we're working on it. We're working on some solutions which might be applicable. I think that those of you that go and buy loose weight in PPDC, you have an easier life. Those of us who don't have access to that shop, it's a little bit harder. But I've noticed that, for example, in the village, in Pondi, or everywhere, you can actually buy loose weight as well. It's a question of priorities. Like, if you want everything to be easy and you want to go to just one big mall, then okay. But if you don't mind buying the rice from the street, you can. Or you can go to the market. There is a fresh fruit market in Pondi, and I've bought lots of really lovely things. They're not packed at all. Rice is not packed. Many things are not packed. I'm not saying I'm completely plastic-free here, because it always takes a moment to adapt and figure out where to get the things. But once that routine is going, it should work. I know that one of our girls from the audience here is completely zero waste. So I don't know if you want to share some of your insights. For the local community, because every time they arrive somewhere, you need to figure these things out. So maybe you want to share some of your tips.
Some of my tips. So, yeah, hi everyone. My name is Laura. I've been living a zero waste lifestyle for 5 years actually. I switched to a zero waste lifestyle when I came here to Oroville because I saw all this plastic all over the place, and yeah, I didn't want to be part of the problem. Wanted to be part of the solution, and well, it feels great to be part of the solution. And so, yeah, I applied the 5 principles of zero waste, which is refuse whatever you don't need, straws, plastic bags, any single-use plastic, pretty much. Refuse, reduce whatever you have, whatever you need, reuse. Is the third one. Reuse as much as you can, like you explained. Invest in good quality stuff. So refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, which is the last option after refusing, reducing and reusing. And then the very last principle of zero waste is to compost. So yeah.
Compost is wonderful. So how do you buy things here in the shops?
So, well, personally, I go to PTDC.
Okay.
I go with my bags. As you explained, I go with my cloth bags. I compost. And for some specific things which I don't want to buy in plastic, I go to the units, actually. So it took me a while to understand how to do it properly and how it works and... You know, it takes a little bit of an effort. But for instance, I buy cheese from La Ferme Cheese, and I buy tofu from Oro Soya. Mm-hmm. So what I do is that I call them ahead, I ask if I can come to get my stuff. I go with my box, I fill it, like it's, you know, this size of a box. I fill it fully, then I have a stock for a while. And yeah. So then there's no plastic. This is what I do when I can't find a solution, or there's a few things which I make myself also. Like cleaning products, I make bioenzyme, which is a multi-purpose cleaner. But yeah, I mean, in Oroville, we are lucky because we have like soap bars from probiotic shop and all that kind of stuff, which we can get in bulk. But... yeah, this is how I do it. Also, I made a document, an Excel sheet, which I share with whoever wants, mm-hmm. With all my tips and also places where we can buy zero waste in Oroville and around. So if anyone's interested, you can ask me.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Okay. I hope everybody is interested. So please ask her, because... this is exactly what I'm saying. It takes a while to figure these things out. But if you've got the right motivation and you just don't go like, oh, I'm too busy. No, you can't be too busy for this. You just saw this. This cannot be something that you're too busy for. You actually have to take a little bit of time. I know that a lot of girls have problems with shampoos and, you know, plastic bottles and shampoos. I forgot that problem many years ago. I stopped using shampoos. There are methods of not using any shampoos where you can have lovely hair anyway. Usually I wash my hair with vinegar, apple cider vinegar, and this is what I did today, and it's fairly okay. You know, there are, of course, shampoos in bars. You can buy them. I know that's not always fitting all hair, so you need to try and error. I also make my own soap and my own shampoos, so I can also share some recipes with that if you're interested. I use lye, and also I have non-lye products, so it depends. But yeah, this is something that, you know, you make one bar and you have it for 3 months. So yeah, this is something you can do. But here in Oroville, you have places that make shampoos. You do not need any plastic wrapping on that, and you don't need any plastic bottles. And they actually sell the conditioner in glass jars, which you then recycle and give back. There's proper recycling, deposit and return system, which Coca-Cola has been opposing for many, many years. Okay, any other questions? Yes?
Maybe one. Thank you so much. So-called bioplastics from corn or algae?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. So when we talk about bioplastics, the process of polymerization is the same. So it doesn't really matter what you make it from. You still make these long chains, and they still do not degrade mostly. There are some bioplastics that might, but to be honest with you, it's a very misleading concept. They don't disintegrate in nature. They actually, in Europe and in the Western world, they pollute the recycling a lot because they're thrown in with the normal plastics, which is a problem because they pollute the little we recycle, the 2% or so that we actually do something with. You know, when we talk about biodegradation, you need a certain... you need an industrial compost. It's not complicated. We are looking into it with some friends here. Industrial compost simply keep the level of humidity and the level of heat stable for several months, roughly 3 months. So if you have about 59 degrees Celsius and about roughly the same thing about humidity, then the bioplastics will disintegrate. But they need that. So you cannot just throw them in your plastic bin, or you cannot throw them in nature, which is what happens in Europe, for example. I've been involved in many campaigns against bioplastics because of that, because people looked bioplastics, threw them in nature. Some people that would never have done that normally, you know. So that's not a perfect solution, but to be looked into if it's done properly. If you create a bioplastics for Oroville, which is what we are looking into right now, you cannot create that for outside world. You need to create it for a place which has that industrial compost. So if you sell goods from Oroville outside, these people will not have a place to compost that. So this is a bit of a problem. But for a closed internal circle, that can work perfectly. For us and for the need of us here, it can be a very, very good solution. Yep. Any more questions, guys? Don't be shy. No? Recycling? Yes? Go ahead. Come, because otherwise the others don't hear. Come.
Thank you for doing that. We have a solution like make a new plastics but with another components. But quickly?
Yeah, so this is roughly the similar question to Martin's question. I mean, it's fast in the sense that the process is not very complicated. We can do it from corn or from starch. There is another layer that maybe, since you already asked me a question, I'll explain another layer of a problem. Corn is what feeds most of the world, more than rice. Most people don't know that. Okay, it doesn't only feed humans, it feeds cattle. Okay, it is by far the biggest one. So if we start to plant fields of corn in our densely populated areas, in order to make single-use plastics, in order to throw them away, I think we're missing the point. Personally, I really think we're missing the point. You know, to throw away products, learning how to make reusable products, we don't have to go so far. We can look at our parents or grandparents who did use very little plastics, as I just explained. You know, it's just in the last 15, 20 years that we're using such crazy amounts of plastics. Before, we didn't. We didn't. So it's actually possible, but maybe it's not the best solution. Depends on what we want to do, yeah? And we're also not fighting everything, right? We're not going to rip out the plastic seats of the airplanes, right? I mean, let's just do the single use. That's already 45% of the problem. So if we focus on that, we're already focusing just on the half of the problem, and then we can maybe get to some solutions. More questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Guys, anything else? Yeah. Yes, please.
It's okay,
Maddie. Speak loud.
What shall we do about the plastic that we consciously and meticulously segregate every day and put in a separate barrel? I am doing that. Paper, plastic, metal, and so on. Because you say that, I think I have heard that plastic is not recyclable.
Okay. Thank you very much for that question. It's a tricky one. I hate to answer that question because, yes, so I'll repeat the question. What do we do with all the plastics that we meticulously sort, clean, put in 10 different bins and so on? Well, we continue doing that, but we should not think of it as a solution because it is not a solution. That plastics are all ending up in a landfill. They're in a hole in Earth, and they will stay there. I just explained to you that plastic does not disintegrate unless it has certain elements, like UV rays. I have a slide here, I didn't show it to you, but I have a slide here from our garden. One summer when we had to make some renovations and we dug a very deep hole of 10 meters, and there we found yogurt, plastic yogurt containers from 1974. They were perfect. They were in perfect shape. Yes, so they were all the plastics that the workers that were working on the house, which was built in 1974, had thrown in and, you know, covered with earth, all their dirt. Well, it was still there, and it was perfect. There was nothing wrong with it. It didn't even was crispy or anything. It was perfect. So I took some pictures of that just to make you realize that the way that plastic, you know, sometimes it becomes brittle, like when you take it and it's been in the sun, it just, like, falls apart. That's when the polymer chains are breaking up. That doesn't happen if it's in the soil, at least not very quickly, and a lot of chemicals will have to leach out first. So no, it is not a solution. A very small fraction of plastics will be recycled. Even on our super duper super mega cool machines in Europe or in America, we have a very small amount of plastic that gets recycled. And again, I do not call it recycled. I call it downcycled, because what we're doing out of these nice raisins are benches for parks. They look very terrible. I mean, if you look at a plastic that is recycled, it's always like brown, gray, really not attractive, and nobody wants it. And you got these benches, which obviously will also break up because they're standing in sunlight. They're not, you know, stone benches or metal benches, which we have in the past. We just had to replace the wooden bars sometimes, right? No, these benches will also fall apart, especially since they're outside. So this is recycling. This is really recycling. I mean, I could get into many more details here, but it's good that we keep plastic contained, because when it's out on the streets, like it is in the villages, it will be burned. And I know, because I have interviewed some of the restaurant owners around in the area, and I have been familiarized with the problem, and here is what I got as a reply. What do you do with your waste every day? I'm trying to find a place to dump it. It's a big problem. I'm like, what? I'm trying to find a place where I can dump it. It's a big problem because I don't know if this land is somebody's. If it's private land, I'll be chased off. And if I dump it a little bit over there and the border is there, that's the next village, they will also scold me. So I cannot do that. I have to dump it here in this village, but I don't know where. I usually dump it in the river, you know, banks, like that. There's like this, where the sewage goes, like when the rainwater takes it, and then that takes it to the sea. In India, plastic amounts that comes into the oceans are humongous. They are humongous. I think it's the country that inputs most plastics into the ocean in the world. I might be wrong by one country, but that's roughly it. So it's a lot. I told you 12 million tons a year from the world. However, don't get me wrong. It's not in India that we consume the biggest amount of plastics. I just found out that in India, on average, we consume 11 kilos per capita per year. Comparable to Europe, we consume 115 kilos per capita per year, and America is more 120, 130 kilos per capita per year. So the consumers of plastics, it's us, the Western countries. We have to stop India from going there because that's a mistake, and implement some solutions and awareness. I think that's where we can start. Okay, yes, Arthur. Innovative solutions. Yes, it was on my list. Innovative solutions. It's another good technique. So if you look where money goes to innovative solutions. Solutions which are hard to scale, hard to implement, completely impossible to implement in this village. Forget about that. There are solutions which are made in laboratories, but they will have the biggest media coverage ever. Like everyone here has heard of Indonella scarensis, or whatever it's called, the bacteria, you know, saccadensis, Indonella saccadensis. I was in touch with the professor from Kyoto who actually discovered it in a PET bottle factory or recycling factory, and he told me, forget about it. That's what he told me. I got it on mail. He's like, to scale this, and how are we going to, 400 million, 9 billion tons of plastics in nature, imagine the bacterium that we will need for that. The scale is just... it's just so huge. Of course, they are working on them. Now they're going to make them into superbacterium. But I'm not sure if that's safe for us, right? Superbacterium that eat plastics. I'm not even sure. These are all research things. Those are like chemical recycling. A lot of people talk to me about chemical recycling. Just the word kills me. Chemical recycling. More chemicals? More chemicals. I mean, we have a lot already, and chemical recycling is not something we can implement in most places, okay? So already our mechanical recycling doesn't work, and chemical recycling is something, a very futuristic solution, and we need to find solutions faster than that. Yep, that's me, in a nutshell. All right, thanks a lot.